Mary Claire Doris. And Vladimir Ashkenazi, whose voice you heard there at the end of the feature, conducts the Sydney Symphony Orchestra in a performance of Scriabin's Symphony No. 3, The Divine Poem, at the Proms this coming Tuesday. That's at 7:30, which, of course, you can hear live here on BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. It's now 1 o'clock, time for the news from Lopo Kotari.
Voting has ended in the Australian general election, which was one of the most closely fought campaigns in the country in decades. The governing Labour Party is in a tight race against the Conservative opposition. Although Australia avoided a recession during the global financial crisis, Labour has been dogged by internal fighting. Officials from both parties say the likely outcome is a hung parliament, which would be the first in Australia in 70 years. Engineers in Iran have started loading fuel onto the country's first nuclear power station. Tehran has said the plant in Bushehr in the south of Iran is a milestone in its drive to produce nuclear energy for civilian purposes. Russia is supplying the fuel. The international community hasn't opposed the plant, but it continues to have strong reservations about the country's atomic ambitions. The West believes Iran's aim is to develop nuclear weapons. Aid agencies in Pakistan say they're struggling to cope with the changing pattern of the floods in the country. Officials say the southern province of Sindh is now the worst hit, with 2.5 million people affected. New warnings are being issued and villages are being evacuated. The Liberal Democrats have dismissed as complete and utter fabrication reports that the former party leader, Charles Kennedy, is considering defecting to Labour. Some newspapers claimed he'd been in talks with Labour whips. Police in Nottingham are investigating the murder of a 24-year-old man who was shot in a back garden. He was killed in the Top Valley area of the city in the early hours of this morning. Detectives in Sweden have issued an arrest warrant for the founder of the whistleblowing website WikiLeaks. Julian Assange is wanted on suspicion of rape and sexual assault. His site leaked thousands of classified American military documents last month. Mr. Assange, who's visited Sweden last week, said the charges were unfounded and deeply disturbing. And the weather, many areas in the north and northern Ireland will be mainly dry and bright with few showers. Heavy rain will affect Wales, the Midlands and areas in the south. Well, that's the latest news and weather at coming up to 1:03.
And time to join Catherine Bott for the Early Music Show, an edition first broadcast in February.
So many does the wind carry off that there is only a kiss, though it be given with the mouth, if the heart does not join with it and give its consent. That's the entire text in all its melancholy brevity of that late 15th century song performed by the Orlando consort. The composer is the Burgundian Pierre de la Rue, and the line, "So many does the wind carry off," could be the motto of the woman at the centre of today's early music show, Archduchess Marguerite of Austria. Why should we feel sympathy for her? Well, she had a rotten life, by and large, one of those noble ladies of the Renaissance who was let down by everyone in her family who should have been supporting her, and she was robbed by premature death of not one, but two husbands. And why is she of interest to this programme? Because she was a formidable and sensitive patron of the arts, more to the point, patron of Pierre de la Rue, composer of that little song, and Josquin des Prez, among others. At her court, art, music and literature flourished. Poets and scholars dedicated works to her, and her library contained 386 volumes. So all the pieces in today's early music show come from manuscripts that Marguerite collected, and as you'll hear, the word regrets looms large in their titles.
Thank you.
Fagiolini with Gombert's J'ai mis mon cœur, I have put my heart in one place only. And before that, La Mora performing the self-explanatory Tous les regrets by Antoine Brumel. On the face of it, Marguerite's potential regrets should have been too few to mention. She was nobly born on the 10th of January 1480, the daughter of Maximilian of Austria, Holy Roman Emperor, and Mary of Burgundy. The simplest of internet searches produces a portrait of her in adult life, with a steady gaze, slightly off camera as it were, from large and intelligent eyes, a long straight nose and well-defined lips, the lower rather protuberant. Her hair is hidden, indeed her head is entirely enclosed, by a starched lawn gamp or wimple. This modest look almost conceals the telltale underbite that goes with those unevenly matched lips. Incidentally, the proper name for underbite is pathologic mandibular prognathism, and another simple internet search reveals that this was also known as Austrian lip or Habsburg jaw because of its prevalence in that dynasty. Marguerite was exceptionally well educated for a woman of her time, learning to play several instruments and acquiring a lifelong love of literature. At just 2 years old, she was betrothed to the 13-year-old Dauphin of France, the future Charles VIII, so her excellent education actually took place in France, where her parents sent her to live from the age of three, and where she was called the Little Queen. The next song has words probably by Marguerite herself. As she was moved to France at so early an age, French became her mother tongue. It's about longing, homesickness and, yes, regret. La Mora with Delarue's Pour un jamais un regret me demeure.
Thank you.
Orlando Consort with Agricola's Sidedero, a song about sleep, and before it, La Mora with music by Marguerite of Austria's own favourite composer, Pierre de la Rue. The little queen spent her childhood being prepared for her future regal life, but when she was just 11, it all went horribly wrong. Her fiancé, the Dauphin, rejected her as his consort in 1491 and married Anne of Brittany instead. This was deeply humiliating for Marguerite and naturally caused a dispute between the Habsburg Empire and France. The poor child spent several months imprisoned as a hostage while tempers cooled. Presumably she was confined in reasonable luxury with her usual retinue in attendance, but it must have been a miserable time. Eventually she was sent to spend the next few years in Malines, Mechelen in modern-day Belgium, where her step-grandmother Margaret of York encouraged her in her love of books. No longer La Petite Reine of France, she was still Marguerite of Austria, and as she grew up, more dynastic plans were being made for her. In 1497, at the age of 17, she was betrothed again, this time to Prince Juan of Spain, son of the Catholic monarchs Fernando and Isabel. So off to Spain, and an horrific sea crossing, which proved to be a tragic omen. This is Josquin's Plusieurs Regrets, sung by the ensemble Clément Jeannequin.
Thank you. Thank you.
I don't know if she loves me, but I shall try to win her favour. Petite Camusette, The Little Snub-Nosed Girl, by Ockeghem, performed by Romanesque, and before that, Ensemble Clément Jeannequin in Miserable Mood, with Josquin's Plusieurs Regrets. In April 1497, the 17-year-old Marguerite of Austria was married to Prince Juan of Spain, in a double wedding which also saw her brother, Philip the Handsome, marrying Juan's sister, Juana. Neither marriage turned out well. Juana is seldom mentioned without the appendage to her name, La Loca, the Mad, although she was maligned and more than let down, betrayed would be a better word, by her husband and later by her son. Juana and Marguerite were sisters-in-law then, and Marguerite became pregnant shortly after her marriage to Prince Juan, cue courtly rejoicing. But within 6 short months she was a pregnant widow, and her daughter was stillborn. At 18, she was no longer an Archduchess of Austria, but the Dowager Princess of Asturias. She returned home again, with her wedding gifts, among them 10 manuscripts for her library.
Thank you.
Bass dances we can hope that Marguerite of Austria may have danced to. It's probable, because they're contained in a manuscript from her library. They were played there by the Klemenčič consort. In 1501, Marguerite married again to Philibert, Duke of Savoy, who, like her, was 21 years old. They had just 3 years together before he too died. There were no children. Marguerite declared that she would never marry again. Her court historian and poet, Jean Lemaire des Belges, called her Dame de Deuil. Thus, according to my destiny, may my name be the ill-starred lady, the lady in mourning, always sad and grieving. And Marguerite herself adopted the motto, Fortune, infortune, fortune. Easier to grasp by reading it than hearing it. It means, fortune makes one very unfortunate. Marguerite's marriage contract with her late lamented second husband entitled her to some valuable jewellery and books. When she finally returned to her home in Malines, she had the makings of a wonderful library, including works by Christine de Pizan and the famous Très riche heure du Duc de Berry. It was perhaps at this time that the portrait I mentioned earlier was made, showing her as a widow, with coif, gamp, and a collar that was a masterpiece of a skilled wielder of the goffering iron. Marguerite is remembered today mainly as a patron and bibliophile, but she was not just a reader or an enjoyer of the arts, she was also a poet. Literary scholars are not in full agreement about how much she wrote, but as we're concentrating on the music in her life, it's fascinating to read between the lines of the manuscript now kept in Brussels, which was compiled for her between the years 1508 and 1516. It's full of the wistful songs of regret that Marguerite so loved, and it's very likely that some of the song text are hers. Let's hear two more songs by Pierre de la Rue, the manuscript's only piece in Flemish, followed by another regrets song.
Thank you.
Pieces by Marguerite's favourite composer, Pierre de la Rue. The Orlando consort sang Secrets Regrets, and before that, La Morra gave us a love song in Flemish, Mein Herz alfait heft verlangen, My Heart is Always Singing for You. Marguerite's court in Malines was an important cultural centre from 1506, when her brother died, leaving a mentally frail widow. Marguerite acquired important dynastic responsibilities too, when she was appointed as governor of the Habsburg Netherlands and guardian of her nephew, the future Holy Roman Emperor Charles V. She threw herself into this new life with zest, negotiating a favourable treaty with England, which pleased the Flemish cloth trade, and proving an able intermediary between her father and his Netherlandish subjects. When Charles came of age, he naturally rebelled against his aunt's authority, but soon came to realise what a wise adviser she was.
Thank you.
Agricola's Je n'ai deuil, I have no grief that does not come from you, sung by the Orlando Consort. Marguerite's reign was by and large a time of peace and prosperity for the Low Countries, although by the time she died in 1530 at the age of 50, the Reformation was taking root and the first Protestant martyrs were being burnt in her lands. One of her last significant political achievements was a treaty called the Paix des Dames, or Ladies' Peace, because her co-signatory was her friend and sister-in-law, Louise of Savoy. A last piece of music for Marguerite, La Mora again, with the anonymous Sous sa tombelle. Within this tomb lies a worthy slave whose heart, losing its lady, cannot bear to live. La Morra, with an epitaph for the lady in mourning, Marguerite of Austria. I said at the beginning of the programme that she had a rotten life, by and large. Thinking about it, is that really true? Sure, it was a lonely childhood, but she was bred to that. Her rejection by the Dauphin was humiliating, her loss of two young husbands and a baby wretched. But her education, so rare for any woman in those days, must have given her the resources to get over it all and, as people like to say these days, move on and get closure. Her rank, her education, and her sensitivity to the arts enabled her to govern wisely and establish a court thronged with the finest writers, painters, sculptors, and musicians. We owe much of the music in today's early music show to her, either directly or indirectly. So despite all her fondness for regrets, I hope that she found much to enjoy in her life as a true Renaissance woman.
The Early Music Show was presented by Catherine Bott. All the details of today's music can be found on the Radio 3 website at bbc.co.uk/Radio 3. Just follow the links from there to the Early Music Show page. And the Early Music Show tomorrow lunchtime will be looking at the life and music of Johannes Ockeghem, who was born some 600 years ago. And that too will be presented by Catherine Bott.
Vladimir Ashkenazi conducts the Sydney Symphony in the BBC Proms on Tuesday, bringing to life the lushly romantic waltzes of Richard Strauss's Der Rosenkavalier. That's followed by Scriabin's Third Symphony, portraying the dance between the human spirit and the cosmos. And there are jazz rhythms to finish as Hélène Grimaud plays Ravel's G major piano concerto. The Sydney Symphony at the BBC Proms this Tuesday evening at 7:30 here on BBC Radio 3.
Well, it's time now for a repeat of last Monday's Proms Chamber Music Concert. It's presented by guess who? Catherine Bott.
Welcome to Cadogan Hall, where Chelsea meets Knightsbridge, the home of Proms Chamber Music every Monday throughout the season. We're on to recital number 5 now, so actually, to many of you, welcome back. Just 2 works in today's programme and 2 artists. Violinist Yulia Fischer, who's fresh from playing Shostakovich last night in the Royal Albert Hall, and making her Proms debut, pianist Milana Czerniawska. Yulia and Milana, who are regular chamber music partners, will join forces in one of the best-known works in the violin and piano duo repertoire, the sonata by César Franck. First, though, a sonata for solo violin composed by the virtuoso player who gave the first performance of the Franck, Eugène Isaïe. Isaïe, like Franck, was from the Belgian city of Liège. Born in 1858, he began to study the violin at the age of 4, and throughout his international playing career, he was revered for the intense poetry of his playing and his superb technique, all substance and no showmanship. To the teacher, Carl Flesch, he was the most outstanding and individual violinist I have ever heard in my life. Later in life, Isaïe made a smooth transition to a conducting career, and during the years he taught at the Brussels Conservatoire, his regular concerts Isaïe were devoted mainly to new French and Belgian music. The sonata we're going to hear now is one of a set of 6, written in the early 1920s when Isaïe was in his 60s. His health was poor, and he'd long since stopped playing. But into this music, he poured all the memories of his lifelong love affair with the violin. Now, to play Isaïe's Sonata No. 1 in G minor, we welcome Yulia Fischer.
Thank you. Thank you.